Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, a podcast where authors and friends share all aspects of the Catholic faith. Learn more on reconciledtoyou.com.
Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, a podcast about Catholic books and about the Catholic faith shared in our everyday, ordinary life. I am joined today by Eileen Tully. I didn't ask how to spell, pronounce
it's Tully. Tully.
Tully. Tully, yeah.
Like what? I don't know.
I was thinking Sully. I don't know why. Yeah. So, like from Monsters,
from
Inc.
Monsters Inc.
I don't know why that's decided to be how we're going to start today's podcast. It just wouldn't be A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras unless it started off awkwardly. So it's kind of how I roll. I'm thrilled to have you with me today, Eileen Tully. We're going to talk about her very sweet prayer book, and also about her ministry in general. Her book is Praying with Our Lady of Sorrows, Meditations for Grieving Mothers. And her website, remind me again of your website, Eileen.
Yeah, it's EileenTully.com. I try to keep it simple.
That is simple. When I first started in this podcast kind of, I guess at that point it was blogging world back in 2009, I wanted to be as clever as possible. And I came up with Reconcile to You based on 1 Corinthians 5:20, thinking it's very clever. But then things evolved and changed, and I realized I should have just gone with my name.
I've had a couple of other podcast website names too, and then I just decided to simplify.
I think I do have AllisonGingras.com, but anyway, I digress again. So Eileen, tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Yeah, so I live in New Hampshire with my husband and my 6 children, and I am a convert, or I guess technically a revert to the faith. My family, I was born and baptized and made my first communion in the Catholic Church, and then my parents, when I was, I guess I would have been about 8 or 9, left the church to become Protestant. And, you know, of course, we all went with them, my 2 siblings and I. And so I was Protestant for most of my life. But then I started to just feel a draw back to the Catholic faith and the liturgy. And I really missed it and started to come back to it on my own, right before having met my husband on CatholicMatch.com.
So, that's so
it's
cute.
Funny, I was signed on there even before I was Catholic, because my sister had converted before me and she wanted to show me somebody she was going out with. So I had to make an account to be able to check him out. So I made the account and then ended up meeting my now husband, who is a cradle Catholic. So the reason, I don't know if you want me to go into,
well, we can definitely jump into that in just a moment. I'm also a reaver. And so, and I like that expression, you know, like I'm not a convert. I reverted
to
my faith, but I was away for, I made my first communion, my confirmation. We went Christmas and Easter. I tease that my mother also brought us Ash Wednesday and Palm Sunday because she just likes a bargain and she liked free things. I can't think of any other
reason. We get
ashes
and palms. We're good.
I mean, Palm Sunday, obviously, day of obligation. I was very shocked when I learned as an adult that Ash Wednesday, not a day of obligation, but still a beautiful, obviously, a beautiful day to go to Mass, to get your ashes, to share your billboard for a day.
Your faith, yeah.
Your faith. It's so beautiful. It's kind of why I like sacramentals so much, because they're a billboard for your faith. So what, maybe just one quick question about your reversion. What was maybe the one thing that kind of tipped you back, besides, you know, finding a cute guy? what brought you, you know, back to the Catholic Church?
Well, that's such a good question. And I feel like God really orchestrated, as he does for us so many times, you know, a whole number of different things in my life. At the time, I was attending a I don't know if it would be considered like a mega church, but it was like a non-denominational Protestant church that met in this multi-purpose like gym slash sanctuary. And I wouldn't even call it a sanctuary. It was like a gym slash place with a stage where there was, you know, there was worship, like a worship band, which was like a rock band that I actually would like sang in and participated in.
And, oh, I did too. I sang in a Christian, contemporary Christian.
Did you?
I loved being a little doo-wop girl. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. I loved, it was like my little rock star moment.
We
sang for adorations at a youth event nearby, but sorry.
Okay, yours was Catholic, but my, right, so I was with, like, I did sing with a band in college, and then I was singing with the worship team here in this Protestant church, and I can't explain exactly why it just didn't sit right with me forever. Over time, it just started it felt too casual. You know, it was really come as you are. Everybody was in jeans. And, you know, I'm not knocking that. And I know God meets us where we are, you know, like no matter how we're dressed, he's going to meet there and be there with us. But I really was feeling drawn to, I missed liturgy. I missed the smell of incense. I missed like reverence and quiet and kneeling and bowed heads. And it was just, I was not having that, getting that there. And I remember one day, like there was, I just reached this point of, I can't keep doing this anymore. Like there, I felt like I was just being somehow untrue to what I knew was proper worship, maybe is how I can describe it. And I sang that morning. We had worship was like the way we opened our service. So I sang and I came down off the stage to grabbed my Bible and my purse that was on my chair and walked out and got in the car and drove away. And that was it. Like, I felt like it was just like, I can't anymore. Today is it. I got to go. And so I know people were like, what are you doing? You know, we were supposed to sing after at the end of church too. And I was like, I don't know what is wrong. I don't know what to say, but
that is a powerful conversion story. Wow.
Well, so, right. So it didn't lead me right directly to the Catholic Church necessarily. I felt like there was a time when I needed to just have a break, which, you know, like I just was like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing right now, but this is not it, you know, like whatever it is. So I did like do a little bit of church hopping and trying to figure it out. And I had this real big, I just needed a big change. And I was living in Pennsylvania at the time and I decided to move up to Boston. I was applied to Boston College to get my master's degree. I just was like, that's it. Like, I'm just changing all these things, you know, like I didn't know what to do. Yeah. But when I moved up, I lived with a family in Wellesley and they were Catholic and I would take the kids to mass. And I was like this, you know, you just get that smell, you know, of the incense, right? It's just, you walk in and it's like, oh yeah, yeah. And the Eucharist, I mean, the consecration would just leave me in tears. Just, it was so beautiful and I had missed it. And I was so young when I was experiencing it before that I just didn't appreciate it, right? It was just what we did on Sunday. As an adult and to watch the consecration and to understand what's happening. And I mean, it was nothing like what was happening in that Protestant church with our rock band.
Eileen, I have to say, as an adult, until I started to really spend time learning about the faith, I didn't understand what was going on there. I was kind of
I didn't even fully. I mean, we can't even understand it anyway, right?
I would just kind of check in. I remember some Catholic speaker talking about how when we enter the church, there's the holy water, and it's like we dip our hand like a time card, like punch in, punch out.
Yes.
And I would bring the bulletin to my pew and I would, you know, make a to-do list while the homily
like
was
on the back of the book.
I would read it like during the readings and then I'd leave mass and go, I didn't get anything out of that because I didn't know. And so I think I'm grateful for my faith, but I'm really, really grateful that the Holy Spirit put on my heart to learn more, to dive deeper, to find out about the sacramentals, to find out about the consecration, to find out, like, obviously, yes, I will never understand the unfathomable God.
Right.
I don't want to understand the unfathomable God. Like, if I can understand God, we are all in big trouble.
We're in trouble. That's right.
We don't want that. But I miss the Catholic calisthenics, I called it, right? Like, with the bells and the smells and the whistles and all the things that you're talking about. I missed the stand, kneel, sit, which I call the Catholic calisthenics.
Yes.
I missed the incense and the candles and the reverence.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that I missed it until I came back and saw it and smelled it and participated in it and was beautiful. Like, oh, yes, like this. Oh. It's so reverent, right? Like, it's just so very different from what I was doing. And so, so then, like, being, I'm a scientist myself, like, I was a biology major. So I really need to, like, understand, like, why do we do this? And what is this? And what is the incense? And why are we doing, you know, like, what's happening up there? And why is it happening? And I really had to kind of dig to make it personal for myself, like make it my own faith too, you know.
I like that. And I think I also really love how you talked about you church hopped or church shopped. And I think that's okay. Yeah. It is okay to make sure, because that's kind of my aha moment that I was in the right church, was when I went with friends to their service in a Protestant non-denominational church. Yep. I loved the music. Yeah. I loved the worship. I loved the sermon. I loved that everything was rich and deep in the Bible. I loved all of it.
Yes.
But at the end, I was like, but something is missing. Mm-hmm. What is missing? And then I
realized, I couldn't put a finger on what it was. Yeah.
It was, for me, it was the who. Like, I was looking to be close with Christ, as close as I could get to Christ.
Yes.
And then I realized there's no way to be closer to him than to receive him in the Eucharist and be a living, walking tabernacle. Like, that's what I missed. And it took me a while to get, you know,
to understand it. Yeah.
To understand that. But I knew at that very moment, kind of like you, like, I went to the service, like, this is amazing. I love this, but this,
but I need something's not there.
Yeah, something's not right. Something's not, for me, something wasn't. But I don't think I would have come to that conclusion if I hadn't gone someplace else. And it also took me a while to find the Catholic church I wanted to be a part of as well, that had the community I was looking for. And I don't think you should priest shop or follow him everywhere. But if this is how you're fed and it keeps you in the church, then I say go for it.
Right.
100% go for it. Because what's really important is that you build that relationship with Christ. And however you're called to do that, you've got to do it. Because the alternative is that you grow lukewarm or worse, and you drift away to try to find what you need somewhere else.
And that's right. So, yeah.
Soapbox done.
I'm tracking right with you. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
So let's talk about praying with Our Lady of Sorrows, meditations for grieving mothers. And this is really a big part of your ministry. Tell us about this story.
Yeah. So one of my biggest stumbling blocks to conversion or reversion back to the faith was Mary. Just as a Protestant with a mother wound who had a difficult and unhealthy relationship with my own mother, I just did not get the Catholic dogmas, but even just like, I heard people saying like Mama Mary and like just ask Mary, and I was just like, what? Like, this is just not even it was not only something that I didn't understand, but it was like I didn't want to understand it. Like, I wanted no part of it. And I can even remember my mom, as I had some friends in college who were Catholic and who would debate with me sometimes about the faith, and you know, we'd have these discussions, and if I mentioned it to even my own mom, the look of disgust on her face, that she would be like, ew, mediatrix of grace? What is that? Like, ugh, you know? And then I was just like, I don't know. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. And she was like, whatever it is, no, like, I don't want any part of it, you know? So I was left with this really just, I mean, to say there was a bad taste in my mouth, it was just like, I just wanted nothing to do with her, you know? So, and I remember my first, my first confession before I came back into the church, where I was just, this priest was wonderful because he had been a psychologist, and, you know, just sort of unpacking this, I don't know, how do you just have your first confession in like 30 years, right, of with this priest, or 25 years or something from having been a Protestant. But I just said, I'm really, really struggling with Mary. Like, I just, the way I feel about it is that, okay, it could be true, like all of these dogmas about her, and I believe that God can do that and that it could be true, but I really have trouble like accepting them myself as the truth and feeling like firmly like, yes, that's it. But I will respect that that's what the church teaches. Like, I will respect that it's possible that it could have been, you know, she could have been ever virgin and she could have done, you know, just all of these different assumption into heaven, all these different things that were just, you know, for me as a Protestant, it was like, show me where it is in the Bible and then I'll believe it, right? So, but it's not in the Bible. So, I mean, not specifically like in that way that I was hoping it would be. So our family, in addition to experiencing two early miscarriages, in 2011, we lost a set of identical twins. So one was stillborn, and then the other one died in the NICU at 47 days old. So you can imagine it was just devastating. It was devastating for our family. I would say I always felt like I had a really close relationship with God, but my spiritual life really took a hit there. And I sort of remember just going outside and looking up at heaven and being like, is all of this real? Like, are they really with you? Are you even real? Like, it really is just where the rubber meets the road for our faith, isn't it? When you have something like that, where you're just like, okay, you've been talking the talk right now. Like, do you really believe this or not? And one of the hardest things for me was prayer. After that, I felt like I did not know what to say to God. I mean, I had begged and pleaded and screamed, asking for healing for our girls. And obviously the answer was no there, right? So I just felt like our relationship really took a hit. You know, I thought, I don't know what to say to you. All I can do is just cry and be like, just help me get through this, you know, because it feels like I can't even function anymore. And so after several years of that, actually, which was like probably one of the driest times spiritually I had ever had, I was waking up early to go downstairs in the morning. I have, well, at this point, I probably had 5 children. I would like to get a cup of coffee in before the chaos of the day started. Then I'm gonna just wake up a little bit. And so I was doing that. This was like 2017. So it was 6 years maybe after our daughters died. So that was, that's a long time to be. Not that I wasn't praying and we were still going to church and I still had faith. It was just dry. I just felt dry. I felt like I don't know how to reconcile my faith with what happened. And I can remember even asking God, like, Bridget, my second daughter, died on a Thursday night at the hospital, and on Sunday, we went to Mass, and my head was not at Mass. You know, my head was processing everything that happened. And I just, you know, I can remember kneeling down for the consecration, and I'm just talking to God in my head. And I'm thinking of this verse that I had just talked to you about earlier. It was just like, God is being a good father. That he, you know, if we ask him for bread, he doesn't give us a stone, you know, and I just I just said, I do believe this about you, but help me understand how this is good, right? We already had one of our daughters die. Like, why the second one too? And how could this, like, I can understand saying no to my children for things that would be bad for them, right? I mean, we have to say no sometimes. I get that as a parent. But, you know, help me understand how I would never say no to them for something that was good for them, right? Or that would, you know, that were just like, how could this have been bad? Why would you let me get pregnant anyway if it was a bad thing? So I felt like he gave me a little glimpse of an answer there, in that he just, I sort of had a flash of imagining myself cooking something for my children and like, imagine that you had planned out just how you wanted to use these things for them, like for their birthday party or something like that. Right. But they were like, oh, can I just have some of those? Maybe chocolate chips. That was in my mind, that was my example. But I had counted out, I just needed that many to do what I needed to do for them, you know? And so I said no to this toddler child of mine in my little flash of a vision that I had. And he lost it because he is so limited in his capacity for understanding. Wow. Right.
What a powerful analogy, Eileen.
Right. So he loses it, but I, out of love for him, can still be unmoved by those pleas, by his tears, by his crying. Like, I can still be like, trust me, I have a plan for them. And I can't tell you about it right now. You just need to trust that I'm doing something for you that's good. And in order to do that, I have to say no to this right here. And so it was like, I had this awareness that like, how God was just saying, how much more do you think that I can say no to you for this? And just please trust me that there's something better that I have in store. There's something I'm planning. There's something I'm using. And I need to say no right now to this so that I can say yes to that. And it was like, I mean, it was Sunday after she died. It certainly didn't heal my grief. I still had years and years of grief, but it was like a balm for my wounded heart, you know, that was just like, okay, I get it. That's if I was a mother and I said no because I had something better in store, my child would be upset, but only because they're limited in their capacity for understanding. I know more than them, right? And so it was him just saying, I know more than you, right? I have more, I have the whole eternity in mind and in view when I'm saying no to this. So that said, I got up for coffee in 2017, and even after this dry spell where I was just sort of like, I do trust you. I will trust you that you have a plan, but I still feel like our relationship is not super close like it was. And I had this little prompting to pray the rosary, which came from nowhere. I mean, there is nothing in me that had any desire, understanding of what the rosary prayer was. It was repetitive as a Protestant. It was just like so foreign to me, right? Like, I wasn't a Protestant then, but I just mean, it wasn't part of my repertoire, right? So I looked up on YouTube some, like, how to pray the rosary. I didn't even know how.
I had to look it up,
and there was like a bishop was praying the rosary, and you could just pray along with them. So I did that every morning. I did that because I just felt like that's what I was supposed to do. And I will tell you that it was so healing to my heart. Like, there was something about having a prayer that I could pray without having to muster it myself, right? Like, like my Protestant prayers had to be, if they weren't spontaneous, they weren't genuine, right? But just having, like, whether it's the repetition or it was just the words, they were comforting, they were healing, they were therapeutic for me.
I was just at the Museum of Family Prayer in Easton. I work for Family Rosary. And With my office is attached to the Museum of Family Prayer, Father Patrick Payton, the Rosary Priest. And I was just walking. Sometimes I will just get up from my desk, and I love that I can take a walk and a break on my desk and just walk through
and a museum. Oh my gosh.
Right?
Yes.
Like crazy. Right. So yesterday, and I thought, you know, I think after this time I've seen everything, but I haven't. And I love that. I think that's a beautiful thing about God, is that we think we've seen everything God has to offer, and then little surprise.
He surprises us. Yeah.
So there's a video that rolls, and there is a quote, and I don't know if it was Father Patrick Payton's quote or if it was I actually don't know who said this, but I will find out. But anyway, the quote was to the effect that praying the rosary quiets our hearts so we can hear Christ who dwells within it.
Ah,
right?
Oh, I have goosebumps. Yes.
And as I'm listening to you speak and how it brought you healing and how it brought you this peace, that quote just kind of just jumped out at me.
Yes. Like, I think that's one of the hardest parts to prayer after you have grief, is that when you finally do have a quiet moment to still yourself, your mind starts racing, or you just start crying, or it's just very hard to be peaceful and still. And having that rosary to focus on, it gives you something that's, you know, because that silence so quickly gets filled with our racing thoughts,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
When we're praying.
Yep.
But it just gives you something, obviously, to meditate on and to focus on while you're doing it. And I just found it to be such a beautiful and healing prayer for me. So, I mean, so then how to get from there to Our Lady of Sorrows was it's such a funny story, because so I felt like Our Lady just really kind of knew that I needed a little bit of introduction to her, you know, like that. She knew that I needed her to ease me into it because of my, I don't want anything to do with you, Mary, kind of attitude towards her. It felt to me like she was like, all right, let's just start with the rosary. Okay. So that's what we did. When I got there and I was recognizing how healing it was, I prayed my first novena, which was to Our Lady Undoer of Knots. I don't know if you've prayed that one before, but that is a doozy.
Yeah. Quite a bit.
Someone was just like, that was your first novena? I was like, yeah, I never prayed a novena before. But I had these relationship troubles. I had these, you know, this trauma from this child loss. I had all of these knots that I was just like, all right, Blessed Mother, let's take it a step further. let's kick it up a notch and see what happens here. So I did that novena, and on day 9, when I tell you that, it was like a weight was lifted off of my shoulders. It was just, she just proved herself to be this loving, capable mother who truly had my best interest at heart, which was not my own experience of a mother, you know? So it was just whoa, okay. This had me sit up and take notice and be like, oh my goodness. Okay. So this is going to be different than what I know from a mother. And so then I made a consecration. Our family enrolled in the Brown Scapular, just, you can see it. Things kind of just snowballed from there.
Yes.
To where I was.
I've noticed that, once I open my heart, just a tiny bit.
It was this little crack, and then
crack, and it's the grace waves just keep coming, and it's such a beautiful gift that God gives us. He doesn't ask us to do a lot. Just turn, just open our hearts, just give him a little crack, and in he brings.
Well, right, and I feel like Our Lady did that for me too, because she knew that I needed to just little by little and even just experience her love in just such a personal way. So at the end of 2019, I was preparing a homeschool lesson for my kids, which is how I am learning a lot about our faith, because I'm learning with them as I'm creating some kind of lesson for them. So it was almost the feast day of Our Lady of Sorrows in September. And I did a little lesson for them on the 7 sorrows. And when I read them, I just knew, whether it was her or the Holy Spirit or something, that I needed to look more into these 7 sorrows and connect with her with them. And I was telling you before that I went to a Starbucks. I had my copy of Alphonsus Liguori's Glories of Mary. I had my my laptop, and I'm just digging into her apparitions to St. Bridget and St. Alphonsus's just his descriptions and his unpacking of her seven sorrows. And I just felt like she just invited me to put myself in her place for each one of those sorrows. And it was, I mean, just such a personal connection that I was just in the Starbucks weeping as I was just trying to understand, like, oh my goodness, I can't imagine that I used to think you were just stoic and unreachable. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, you always just picture her like, oh, Jesus is on the cross. Oh my goodness. Like, you know, I just think like, how can like I relate to that? Like, I am broken, right? Like, right. But she's not, you know, like if you put yourself in her place for those sorrows and you imagine, oh my goodness, what did that feel like for you? I really just was so humbled by the fact that I could tell that she was connecting with me in this shared experience of losing a child, right? So that is how
it's beautiful.
I just, the book, you know, I started meditating on her sorrows and relating them to child loss and recognizing that for other mothers who may also be struggling with prayer, because that's just such a hard thing when you're grieving, that it would be, you know, just hopefully something that would be helpful for them to be able to connect with Our Lady in that way.
I wish that I had that. I had an ectopic that actually nearly took my life, and by the grace of God, I survived. And then just a year later had a miscarriage, and it was that same, Lord, I just want to do your will. I just want to have children. I don't understand why this is so bad for me. Like, why are you not? And I stopped talking. I didn't go very long. I think it's very hard when you have a faith, a deep faith, and you try to be like, all right, Lord, I'm done with you. And you're still hurting.
Yes.
That grace still exists. He's patient. He's such a loving and patient father. And I did, I came back and it was the same understanding of that God's ultimate goal for me is heaven. And yes, here's what happens to me here, but every single thing he orders and allows, because he doesn't bring bad, he does it against his nature, and he can't go against his nature, which is love, as St. John tells us, that everything he orders or allows in our life is for one ultimate goal, for us our to salvation. Be with him in heaven forever. That's our salvation. And it was just so hard, you know, to think about losing. And to me, it was girls, because I had given birth to two boys. And I remember reading some article in some mothering magazine at that time saying that some women, for whatever reason, can't carry a certain gender. I don't remember the exact scientific, but I remember just it clicked in my head. So I gave the girls names. They're Diana and Faustina. And I had to name them, right?
Yes.
So actually, I just lied. I'm looking. My friend made me a little, I can't believe I just did that. Diana, Faustina, and Chris Louise. That's their names.
Oh, Diana, Faustina, and Chris Louise. Oh.
So you would give them names. And I hadn't done that right away. That came later as I realized what God had given me is, in of course, the church, if you're not born and baptized, the church doesn't definitively say, it just says we rely on the grace of God.
That's right.
You know, we say baptism is necessary for salvation, but these children were not born.
Didn't have the opportunity, right.
Didn't have the opportunity, and I thought, well, I have a desire. So there's baptism by desire, but actually I learned later that baptism by desire is only for yourself.
For yourself, so like
if I wanted to be baptized and then I passed away beforehand, I would have that grace of that. But
it is in the, it's actually the consecration.
Yeah, you talked about the consecration. Yeah. And one of the things that I believe is that during our consecration to Jesus through Mary, we give all of our graces, merits from our good works and our prayers to Mary to distribute as she desires. Yes. That's one of the aspects of the consecration, which a lot of people struggle with. But I realize like Mary knows much better what to do with these merits than I do.
Yep.
And I feel with my entire heart that they're given to children who are unbaptized, in my case, Chris and Diana. And just wrapping that up, so what God gave me was two little saints. Yes. That my intercessors, my yes. personal private intercessors, who I put to good work and use, and they have done some pretty remarkable things
yes.
in the 20 years that they have lived with God instead of me. But it, you know, these things don't happen overnight. It definitely no. comes with prayer. It comes with time. It comes right. with really surrendering. And I loved your analogy, like trusting in God. I think about that meme where Jesus is reaching for the little tiny teddy bear the little boy has, and the boy's like, no, but
yeah, don't take it.
It's
a big one,
giant teddy bear.
Yeah, I never saw that, but yes, it's the same idea. It was just, you know, he was just like, Eileen, if you can plan special things for your children, and sometimes it involves saying no, and you can, you know, because you can imagine, like, having a temper tantrum by grieving our children, but you know, on a different scale, right? Yeah. Like, so a child who is so limited in his understanding that anytime you tell them no, they have a temper tantrum. We were told no also, and it wasn't a temper tantrum, but it was just a no that was so hard to accept and understand. Yes. And so
absolutely.
He was just, you know, so good to give me the perspective of like, oh, I can see how I might have to do that sometimes too. Yes.
And it's okay to have that perspective, trust God and still be sad.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the Psalms, right? Like, just, I love like reading through the Psalms and just making those your prayers, because he's like, how long are you going to hide your face from me? Like, I've trusted you from my youth, right? And you did this to me. Like, you know, it's just, those can just be our, like, I don't understand, but he always brings them back. It's like, but I trust in your goodness, but you're faithful, but you're this, you know, like, so.
Which yeah. is why I love that we have the celebration on September 15th of Our Lady of Sorrows. And you actually did a blog for Family Rosary blog. So familyrosary.org, it will land on September 19th, where you share a little bit more of your story. And you share about Our Lady of Sorrows. And unfortunately, Eileen, Tully, we are at the end of our time together this morning. So I am going to just ask just for a wrap-up thought, and again, help us, you know where to follow along with your beautiful ministry, with your own blogging and your own podcasting.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, it's just EileenTully.com is my website, but I have stepped away from social media, and I have a community online for grieving mothers, because I know that community is so important. There's an online video retreat that goes deeper into Our Lady of Sorrows and grief and trauma, and some practical tools for healing from those things after losing a child. So all of that, I guess, EileenTully.com would be like the hub to find all of those things. And I also do some in-person retreats too. But yeah, I mean, Our Lady of Sorrows is such a good example for us in all of our sufferings, and not just having lost a child, but, you know, if we are able to place ourselves in her position for each one of her sorrows, it really, you know, it's like, misery loves company, they say, but rather than, like, because God's kingdom is so upside down sometimes, rather than meditating on someone else's suffering when you're suffering, pulling you down, it actually, like, she just lifts you up and gives you the grace to be able to endure our own trials and suffering so well, because she knows that we need them to get to heaven. We, you know, we need to be, use them and have them, let them purify us to attain holiness so that we can be with her. So she just desires to share grace with us to help us do that.
Amen. I can't think of a better way to end today's podcast. Thank you so much, Eileen,
for spending
this time with us. We have been talking with Eileen Tully. I invite you to her website, EileenTully.com, and to check out her book. I really love this little prayer book, Praying with Our Lady of Sorrows, Meditations for Grieving Mothers. You have been listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras. God bless.
Thank you for listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras. Your reviews at your favorite podcast service help this podcast reach others who may be blessed by the content. please subscribe and share with others. Come back soon for an all-new episode.